I think that you have provided an excellent opportunity for people to be able to use the Star of the Doubts platform to tell their story to a larger audience as well. So having a lot of people up on stage telling their story or giving a specific talk has been cool, because the inspirational part is the fact that some of these people, this may be their first or second time ever getting on stage. So it's giving a lot of confidence to people who want to do this on more of a full-time basis as well.
Welcome to Star of the Doubts. I'm your host, Jared Easley. Joining us, Chris Murphy from ShovelCloud.com. Hey, Chris.
What is going on, fellas?
And ladies.
Yes. So, Chris, you're in Atlanta, Georgia. What brings you to Atlanta, Georgia?
We're in Atlanta, Georgia this weekend for the Launch Out Conference. It's been a really good weekend. We've had some great conversations. I've actually had some really good podcast interviews. I've enjoyed listening to some stories of these attendees and the inspiration behind why they're here and the business that they're running. So it's been really cool.
So today we're going to chat about a few things, but we're going to start by talking about Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Atlanta, when you think of Atlanta, what do you think of?
Well, growing up in Alabama, my first impressions of Atlanta, basically all 100% of the time, go back to the Braves.
Amen.
Yeah.
Atlanta Braves.
Yeah. Again, growing up in Alabama, it's such a football state. Because we only have college sports in Alabama, if we wanted to do any kind of cool pro stuff, it had to be Atlanta, because that was the closest big city. And so the Braves, especially because back in the day, Dale Murphy was the man.
Dale Murphy was the man.
He had my last name. So I pretended to a lot of my elementary school's classmates that he was my uncle. He and Eddie Murphy.
You mean he wasn't? I think you told me that lie, actually.
Oops. So, I'm here to confess something to you.
Yeah, I'm nostalgic really because I'm thinking of Dale Murphy, but I'm also heartbroken. That's not true. No, Dale Murphy was the man, and I actually wrote a letter to Dale Murphy, and it might have been his publicist, but at the time it felt real. I received a reply in type.
No way.
Yeah, with a signature and a picture of him.
What?
And I thought, dude, you know, like, this is the coolest day of my
life. Was it that one where he's like pointing the bat down and the bat's glowing yellow?
Did you get that one too? Because now I don't feel so special.
No, I didn't, but I wanted that poster for a long time.
But I did send a letter to Dale Murphy, and I did receive a reply, and whether it was canned or whatever, it was still a moment for me.
That's very cool.
So, yes, I agree with you on the Braves. And since we're on the topic of the Braves, I don't know if you knew this, but the Braves are building a new baseball stadium.
A new one?
A new one. And that's exactly what I said. I'm like, Turner Field, that's not that old, is it?
No.
When is Turner Field? Let's just figure that out. But the Turner Field was like, what, mid-90s?
I would assume that they were trying to build a new baseball field for the Summer Olympics. It's sometime in that time frame. So.
Agreed.
So, which would have been 96.
It opened in 1997. And as you pointed out, the Olympics were in Atlanta in 1996. Hmm. So it's 2016, 1996, 20 years ago.
Wow. Gosh, that makes me feel old.
That makes me feel old as well. 20 years. And I have it in my head, like, 20 years, that's not that old for a baseball stadium.
I mean, especially when you think about something like Fenway Park or Wrigley Field or something like that. I don't know. Maybe Turner has such deep pockets that they're like, we need to rehaul this whole thing every few decades.
Well, again, I think all of that is reasonable. But I was driving by this area last night with my mom, and there's a big stadium structure. And I'm like, what is that? That's the new Braves Stadium.
Wow.
Why are they building a new stadium? They have Turner Field. I don't know the answer to that, but you know, my first guess is I think it's the area of town where Turner Field is. It's probably not the nice part of town. It might be a little rough. Maybe the neighborhoods aren't as friendly.
Possibly, but where are you going to find in the middle of Atlanta to build an entire new stadium?
Well, they've already started building it, so they've already found all that. And that was another thing. Like, well, you know, it didn't seem like I heard much about this in the news. You know, right or wrong, but my mom was explaining to me, like, yeah, a lot of people didn't know until they were breaking ground.
Wow.
It's kind of like a, hey, let's see if we can, you know,
sneak
this in, because it might not fly with some folks. Yeah, I think the Atlanta Braves are a great answer, but Atlanta's not just about the Braves. There's a lot of cool things about Atlanta. So what else comes to your mind?
Well, growing up just 3 hours west of Atlanta, right outside of Montgomery, Alabama, my family would vacation here, like long weekend kind of vacation stuff. So in the springtime or in the summer, it would be a Braves game. or in the summer, we would go to the World of Coca-Cola and
yes,
all of that. I think it's called Centennial Park, something like that. Yes. All that area, Atlanta Underground. That was always what it meant to me. Again, it was like little fun stuff that you could do for not too expensive that a family of four could run around in and enjoy until you got too hungry and needed to go get some McDonald's.
Did you ever get the chance to go to Stone Mountain?
Oh, yeah. Stone Mountain, too.
Yeah. Stone Mountain's really cool. If you come to Atlanta and you get a chance, go ahead.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's one of those things where I think that there's been controversy in recent years because of the history of some of that area, but it's a beautiful part of the country. And the mountain itself is just, it's cool to see that big stone rock just popping up out of the ground there. How about you? Did you spend much time?
I have hiked to the top.
Ooh.
And I got to say, I was in better shape then than I am now. And I remember being winded most of that hike.
I bet.
So if I were to try to do it now, I think I'd be a little embarrassed with how long it would take me to reach the summit.
Okay, well, forgive me then. Maybe I need to look at the entire topography of Stone Mountain, but I just think of it when I see the big rock wall face. How do you hike up to the top of that?
Oh, yeah. On the other side, they have a way where you can literally hike up to the top. And then they've also got I don't even know what the word is for that, but it's like an incline type of thing you can ride up.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so yeah. I have done that, but I've never hiked it.
Yeah, you can hike it. And it's a little bit of a hike. It's not going to take you, unless you're super crazy, ridiculous in shape and hike all the time. It's going to take you a little while to get to the top.
Say a little while, you mean 20 minutes, 3 hours?
Depending on the level of fitness, it could be a couple hours.
Wow.
Or it could be an hour. I think an hour is probably realistic for most the average person. I think for me, at this stage of my fitness, I would probably be longer than an hour, to be honest with you. That'd be like huffing.
I can curse.
I don't smoke. I don't have anything. But if you smoke, probably not going to want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that is a beautiful area of town. Atlanta, it holds a lot of memories for me. But again, it's so much like we would come to Atlanta and do the same things every time we would come. We'd stay in the same Embassy Suites hotel.
Yes.
We would always go to a Braves game if the season was right. But ironically enough, I'm a big football guy and I like basketball as well. Never been to an Atlanta Falcons game, never been to an Atlanta Hawks game.
I haven't either.
But I couldn't count how many times I've been to a Braves game over the years.
Yeah, more Braves games than the other two. That's for sure. One other thing that I think about, there's a lot of things to think about Atlanta, but I think about Chick-fil-A.
True that. Yeah.
Yes. So let's talk about Chick-fil-A for a minute. When you go to Chick-fil-A, Chris, what do you get?
I always get the spicy chicken sandwich now.
Yes.
Ever since I've been indoctrinated into the world of the spice. It's good, man. It's nice. That and some fries.
Are you a spicy kind of guy, Chris?
I am. I like the spice.
The spice. Okay.
And what about you?
A little waffle fries, I'm assuming.
Always waffle fries and always dip them in some Chick-fil-A sauce.
Yes. Yes. Now,
I like ranch. I like ketchup and all that kind of stuff. But when I go to Chick-fil-A, I only get the Chick-fil-A sauce.
Chick-fil-A sauce. Okay. Yep. And then beverage?
Cherry Coke.
Cherry Coke.
I add a little bit of the cherry.
So you're not doing the sweet tea, huh?
Sweet tea is fun sometimes. Actually, I make a really good sweet tea. And so when I lived in Los Angeles, I had to become a fine creator of sweet tea because there was none in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I would say maybe there's not a lot of places to find sweet tea in Los Angeles.
You could get unsweetened tea everywhere.
Yes.
And they say, you can sweeten it up, just pour some sugar.
Sugar. No, not the same.
It's got to start
whoever said
boiling
that.
Hot, and then you add the sugar so it all melts together into a nice sugary syrup.
Yeah. To say, just put some sugar in it.
So I got so used to making it out there.
Bless their heart kind of responses.
Oh, bless their hearts.
Yeah. Bless their heart.
They don't even know what they're talking about.
Yep. When I go to Chick-fil-A, I just have the chicken sandwich and waffle fries and sweet tea.
Sweet tea?
And I'm happy. Yeah, I'm good.
Good for you. Do you dip it in any kind of sauce?
I like those fancy ketchup packets. I've never seen ketchup packets like that any other fast food place.
Blazing the trail on new ways to dip ketchup.
That's why the
ketchup.
Chicken sandwich is so expensive. It's like, get some cheap ketchup packets, for crying out loud. And they don't have to charge me for this extra.
Yeah, it has always come in plastic wrapped aluminum foil ketchup packets. Why do you have to put it in some cool plasticky thing?
But it is cool. Yeah.
But you know what? Growing up, I think until I was probably in high school, I wasn't aware of the Chick-fil-A phenomenon. Even though, again, growing up in the South, I think in Prattville, Alabama, where I grew up, I think we finally got a Chick-fil-A and I was hooked from day one, but I didn't know that it was such a staple of Atlanta until I was a little bit older. So
it can be addictive.
Yeah, it can. When did you first get on the Chick-fil-A track?
It seems like the first time I remember having Chick-fil-A was probably middle school.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that was a long time ago. And yeah, there was no turning back after that.
I think one time when I came to Atlanta, I had it once, like at a mall.
Okay.
Or something like that. And I thought, oh, okay, it's a chicken sandwich. But I don't think that I must have gotten a bad sandwich that day because it didn't dig a deep memory hole in my brain.
Well, here's a funny story. Like when I was in the military, I was stationed in Hawaii, right? And flew out, moved to Oahu, and they don't have, or at that time, they didn't have Chick-fil-A out there. I don't know if they do now, but back then they didn't. And I remember thinking, if anybody ever took Chick-fil-A and put it in Hawaii, it would make insane money. And there were two things that I craved like a pregnant woman when I was in Hawaii. One was Chick-fil-A and the other was Krispy Kreme donuts.
Ooh, yeah.
Which I think they have now. I don't think they, back then they didn't have it, but I think they have it now.
You know what? I think I have a memory of you and I in our early college days of playing guitar and then going and driving by Krispy Kreme and seeing if the hot, fresh now donut sign is on and going and digging into some of those like 2 a.m.
Well, I have fond memories of that, but I think more like Waffle House.
Oh, sure. And, absolutely.
And you always educating me on the right way to get the hash browns.
Scattered, covered, chunked, baby.
Scattered, covered, chunked. Not smothered.
Oh, smothered if you want to.
Smothered on occasion.
Yeah, okay. And every now and then you could do the tot. Want some mushrooms on there?
That's right. So as we've
I'm getting hungry.
Yeah. As we've alluded to, we've come to Atlanta for the Launch Out Conference, and we're surrounded with a lot of really good people here, and we're having a good time so far. And yeah, I just wanted to, I guess, talk about, you know, what are some things that we can learn from maybe Atlanta or from Launch Out that we can apply to what we're doing with Star of the Doubts?
You know, on that note, before we head down that path, I would love to hear from some of the listeners out there, Atlanta ideals or memories or whatever that comes to their brain as well.
Agreed.
But you know what? It's been cool to meet some of the people from the Launch Out Conference. Some people I've met before, so it was nice to catch up and high five a few folks and give some hugs around necks.
Some awkward hugs.
Yeah. Yes. Some. And like, I think that I know this person.
Yeah. Like full frontal hug. Right?
But no.
Like I'm trying to wash my hands. We're in the bathroom. What are you doing?
Don't stand between me and the sink.
Awkward. Yeah.
But yeah, but I've had a good time. I've actually just sitting here and doing a couple of these podcasts and listening to the stories that people have. They've come to Launch Out Conference with a dream, and oftentimes they want that dream to be told to other people. And so I think that you have provided an excellent opportunity for people to be able to use the Star of the Doubts platform to tell their story to a larger audience as well. So, but having a lot of people up on stage telling their story or giving a specific talk has been cool, because the inspirational part is the fact that some of these people, this may be their first or second time ever getting on stage. So it's giving a lot of confidence to people who want to do this on more of a full-time basis as well.
Yeah, I need to compliment the MC for the event. His name's Jared Murr, and that's not spelled like my name. It's J-E-R-R-O-D, I believe.
I believe, right.
And I believe he's out of Oklahoma, but Jared is, the guy's good.
Sure.
Like, he's a really good, confident person to do MC duties and does a great job on stage. Great speaker.
He seems polished up there.
Very much so.
But he doesn't seem polished to the point of like he's reciting something that he's memorized. It still seems very natural, even though.
Yeah. He surprised me at how good he is.
Sure.
I anticipated he would be good, but he's better than I thought.
I agree.
Yeah.
Totally.
And yeah, so we've had his business partner, I believe they're business partners, Ryan Heller on the show. Ryan does Live Your List. And so hopefully we can get Jared on an upcoming episode here, because I think he's a fascinating guy to get to know. And there's a lot of other interesting folks, people that have been guests on the show before, people that hopefully are going to sit down with us and share some stuff this weekend.
Sure.
So looking forward to that. And then one person that I happened to run into and see is a previous guest from the show, and that's Abby Unger. Abby, of course, wrote the book Make Money with Facebook. We talked to her about her outstanding Facebook group that she has for people that are interested in doing the whole flight attendant thing. So anyway, yeah, we got to see Abby. Yeah, and there's a reason why I'm saying her name. She just walked in the room. So.
Hey, Abby.
Well, yeah, if it sounds awkward, it's because it is. So, yep.
She was trying to be so sweet and tiptoe by us.
Here's another fascinating fact about this weekend is you and I were getting a picture with our good friend Matt Lovell.
Yep.
Right? And Abby took that photo. She's taking the picture. And then she hands me back my phone, and you're like, dude, you're like being weird about my phone. And then it turns out we figured out why you were being a little bit weird about the phone.
You've got the same iPhone cases that I do. And I thought that somehow you took the phone out of my pocket and were snapping pictures with it. And then you were just going to take it as your own. I wasn't used to seeing my case in other people's hands.
So, and then I,
sticky fingers.
Yeah, I was like, we have the same iPhone case. And I know how much money was spent on this case, so then I immediately judged your frugalness.
Hey, I searched Amazon high and low for both cheap and quality items.
Yes, highly reviewed cheap stuff.
This met both criteria. My dad once told me, he was like, you can have two of the three, but you can't have all three. It can be good and fast, but it's not going to be, what is it? It's going to be cheap. You can have something that's not expensive and fast, but it's not going to be good. You can have something that's good and inexpensive, but it's not going to be quality. I don't know, something like.
So let's talk about cheap for a minute.
Let's talk about butchering sayings.
Let's talk about something really familiar with being cheap. When is there a time and a place to be cheap, Chris?
I think the time and the place to be cheap is when life doesn't require quality. And I know that sounds like, well, duh, Chris. But honestly, like sometimes if you just need a t-shirt to wear underneath your suit, you can get that t-shirt from Target. You don't have to get it from an upscale kind of location, you know?
Well, some people consider Target to be upscale location.
Well, that's true. So. That's true. Yeah. I think that there's a comedian out there that talks about the difference between Target is the high end, Walmart is the middle of the road, and Kmart is the bargain basement shopping center.
I think that sounds right.
but I think that sometimes people aren't going to be looking at your shoes, or if people are looking at your shoes to see, do you have the newest, latest, greatest shoe on your foot? That may be all well and good, but they're usually not pulling over your tag on your t-shirt to see if you bought it from the designer place. So to me, I can spend $4 on a t-shirt versus spending $30 on the same exact t-shirt. To me, the quality there doesn't matter. How about you?
But you could make the argument that, hey, why not just go to a thrift shop?
Well, I mean, I draw the line in thrift shopping when undergarments are at stake. Hey, I think
I got these great t-shirts with like stains in the underarm.
Designer stains.
Ew, and yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, so yeah, when it comes to undergarments, I leave those on the racks.
All right, so what is something that you shop for from the thrift shop?
Oh my gosh, my entire high school wardrobe was picked up from Goodwill. I in the mid-90s were rocking bell bottoms.
Yeah, and I gotta say, man, I kind of knew you back then. I was like, this guy is a hipster before it was cool kind of thing.
I think it was just hippie. I think it was I wasn't a deadhead or anything like that, but I could dress the part every now and then. But I had to find the perfect pair of bell bottom pants. They couldn't just be any flared bottom trousers. They had to be the right ones with the cool look. I was probably
so you were a thrift snob.
Oh, I absolutely was. Okay. Absolutely. Did you ever do much thrift shopping?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all did on some level, just because it's hard to beat it. It's so affordable, and there's been suits that I've owned that have been from a thrift shop.
Look at you go,
reasonable suits. You know?
I mean, going back to the whole t-shirt thing, you could go on the right day when they have a sale in Goodwill and walk out with a whole bag full of shirts for less than $5.
Oh, absolutely. You can get that yellow Roger Rabbit t-shirt. That
and the Johnson's Family Vacation.
That one as well. Yeah, I was a part of that. And I was like, who's the Johnson family? I don't know. It's a funny story. My old roommate and best man at my wedding, Nathan Moser, mm-hmm. who you've met. Nathan and I, we went to a thrift shop one time. We found these t-shirts that said it's a family thing you wouldn't understand. And it was like some cheesy reunion, probably an African-American family that had an interesting family reunion t-shirt.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And the back, one of the names on the back was Johnny, and the other one was like Adele or something.
And
he bought Johnny and I bought Adele. And then we would like wear these shirts just because we thought they were kind of goofy or whatever. I guess we were being dumb, but those shirts, it always brought up good conversation. People laughed at it. It was funny.
Here's my most memorable thrift shop find. I bought a t-shirt. It was like a pretty high quality t-shirt, but it said Sox Club. I had no idea what Sox Club was, but I liked the shirt. So I bought the shirt and I wore the shirt all the time. Like once a week to high school, I'm wearing Sox Club. I didn't know what Sox Club meant. I didn't know if I was parading around and something that was giving me away in a weird, you know, giving weird information about somebody that I didn't want to be let out. But I was sitting in Spanish class one day.
Yes, and as one does.
Yes, sure. And Miss Sephor, my Spanish teacher, looked over and said, Sox Club, huh? And I was like, yeah, you like my shirt? She goes, yeah. Do you know what that means? I have no idea.
S-O-C-K-S.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
And so then it was even more of a cool shirt because it had a story behind it.
It had a foreign language meaning.
And you know what? Sox Club is way better than wearing like Big Johnson shirts from back in the day. I remember the
Big Johnson t-shirts. Yeah. I don't think I was allowed to wear them.
I wasn't either. Sox was Club
like,
was one thing.
It was like the gray area or whatever. A little over the line.
Those were way over the line.
Yes.
They pushed it right up against the line.
But a thrift shop, you might get lucky. You might find like Umbros. You know what I mean? You might find something Umbros. That's like super vintage.
Umbros. I haven't thought about Umbros in a long time.
You had a pair of Umbros, right?
Absolutely.
Everybody had Umbros.
No self-respecting soccer poser would be caught dead without Umbros.
I wore my Umbros. I had Umbros of multicolors. Like, I might have even had a pink pair, which I'm a little ashamed of. But, that was okay back then.
Oh, sure. Sure. Now, let me ask you this. For high school fashion, did you rock the knee-high socks, even in shorts weather, or did you go more of an ankle sock situation?
I'm pretty sure I was an ankle sock guy.
Yeah. I can remember I had several pair of the knee-high socks with like the red two stripes at the very top of it. Those were always fun. Again, I was trying to harken back to a dazed and confused moment that I never lived because I was born way after that.
I don't know how we got on this topic.
We can delete this podcast.
Yeah. That's funny though. Yeah. So we talked about thrifting and we talked about being frugal and when it's appropriate to do that. So, let's go back to Atlanta. Tell us a story about a time that you're in Atlanta and how that has had an impact on your life.
Okay. So again, I was saying earlier in the podcast that my parents would always go back to this same hotel, the Embassy Suites.
Yes.
I think it was like near Peachtree something. I don't know. I don't even remember, but I remember they had this kind of like gym/spa area that you could go swimming in or get a massage or whatever. I remember that was the first time that I ever walked into like a spa kind of thing. And I smelled that eucalyptus-y minty smell.
Mm.
And that became my favorite smell of all time. And it still is. If I ever smell that kind of spa-like essence wafting towards me, I'm like, ooh, I need to relax, do some deep breathing. That puts me in a really calm state. The state of Georgia, which is on my mind, in Atlanta.
Okay, so for me, I think of Six Flags, right?
How have we gone however minutes we are into this podcast and not talked about Six Flags Over Georgia?
Well, growing up, because I both lived in the same area, right?
Gosh.
And so Six Flags was like the thing.
It was the only thing. Like, it was the height of my world.
Yeah, going to Six Flags was a big deal. And I remember I was scared to death, Chris, of like roller coasters.
Oh.
And the big ones, and especially the ones that went upside down.
Like the Mind Bender.
I was that kid. The Ninja. Yeah. I wasn't going to touch that. But eventually, I, got up the, I'm going to use the word testicular fortitude to get on one of the wooden roller coasters, right?
Nice.
And there was two. There was one called the Scream Machine.
Scream Machine, baby.
And then there was one called the Georgia Cyclone.
Oh, yeah.
And so I got on the Scream Machine and I was terrified. I thought I was going to die. And then after I rode it, it was the best thing ever. So such is life, right? I mean, a lot of times we think, oh, this is going to be this horrible thing. But then you give it a shot and then you realize, hey, that wasn't so bad.
You and I have almost the exact same story. My first big roller coaster was the Great American Scream Machine.
Yes.
And my uncle made me. Uncle Richard, if you're listening to this, thanks a lot.
Bless him. Yes.
Because you forced a probably 9-year-old kid up on a roller coaster. And I was scared to death. And I spent the whole time with my head buried between my legs trying to save myself from what I thought was going to be instant death. But I remembered as the roller coaster started to come to an end, I thought, this is fun.
Did you do the Georgia Cyclone as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. But pulling back into the station there with the Scream Machine, I thought, I am a roller coaster dude from now on.
Totally.
And from then on, like it was the entry level to, I don't know.
It's like
how
a gateway
many.
Drug.
Oh, it really was. And the Georgia Cyclone was really cool because if you could sit in the back seat, you almost came up off of the rail there.
I remember I got a little more bold.
Sure.
I got a little more confident. And I decided, not only am I going to ride the Georgia Cyclone this time, I'm going to keep my hands up,
baby,
the whole time. Now, there's people that are shaking their heads and rolling their eyes and saying, oh, that's nothing. But you got to understand, at this particular stage of my life, that was a big deal.
It was the biggest. Yes.
It was a big deal. And I did it. I got on the Georgia Cyclone, hands up the whole ride. I don't recommend it. Probably not very safe. I could have got it like a horrible splinter or something if I did anything. And that would have just been the worst podcast ever. But yeah, I did it and I loved it. And that gave me more confidence and courage to go and try some of these other rides that I ended up not liking. But I still look back on the Scream Machine and the Georgia Cyclone and think, wow.
Were you more of a wooden roller coaster guy than the loop-de-loop steel guys?
I'd say at this stage, yes. If I was to ride a roller coaster, I'd be more interested in the wooden. I don't know. I didn't dislike the roller coasters that go upside down. But yeah, I don't know, man. Like now I'm less interested.
Sure.
Maybe it's because I'm getting older.
Man, I tell you what. I would hate to admit this, so I'm not going to say this on the podcast. But
go ahead and say it.
Yeah.
Go ahead
and say it. But the last couple of times.
You're not going to pull this out of me. But, okay.
You twisted my arm. The last couple of times I've ridden roller coasters like at Disney or something like that, I have felt them harder than I did when I was a kid.
True.
Like the G's that you pull or, you know, just the gravity trying to
like
press
Space
against
Space Mountain
you.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, man. I can feel it a lot more. And so I think, yes, I think you're right. I think we're getting old. My kids are actually getting to the age now to where I was when I first rode the Scream Machine all those years ago. And so they are both varying degrees of scared and nervous when they get on the coasters now too. But every time they're done, they want to go again, even though we keep having to talk them into getting in line.
I've had a problem with motion sickness.
Oh yeah.
And usually I can ride rides and I'm okay, but there's sometimes it gets me.
Oh yeah.
And I remember at the Atlanta Six Flags, I got on the Ninja and rode the Ninja. And I remember after the Ninja, I was feeling a little yuck.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, sure.
And it reminded me of a time, this is an embarrassing story, in Montgomery, where, you know, that's the area where we grew up, they'd have in October, the South Alabama State Fair.
Yep.
You know, I think they still do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this big deal. It was like a big carnival. It was at the, you know, state fairgrounds.
Yep.
Awesome place to go.
Sure.
You know, you wanted to get tickets and ride all these rides put together by like old tires and chains and
Band-Aids and glue, man. They were
horrible. Yeah. And I remember like I was fourth grade and I'd gone with some friends.
That's always where you get in trouble.
To this
peer pressure.
Well, you know, fourth grade, how much trouble are you going to get into? Peer pressure. Eat some funnel cake.
Yeah. More corn dogs.
It's like that Geico commercial where their kids are harassing the other kid to drink milk. What's going on in here? Anyway, yeah. So my friend Chris, his name was Chris. They wanted to get on the, you know, the swings that go around in a circle.
Sure.
I thought this looks fine. No big deal. So we get on the swings. We start going in a circle. The first few circles, it's like, okay. Then, you know, you get a little further into it. You're like, I don't like this. You know, like I'm starting to feel it. And you keep going. And then it happened, Chris.
Oh, no, it did.
I had a moment and projected vomit.
Oh, poor Jim.
Pouring out of me. I'm in fourth grade and they stopped the ride. And the very kind, you know, polite guy working this ride, understanding my pain, being empathetic, said to me, next time, puke off the ride.
I thought he was really going to be sweet to you.
No, he wasn't. Scarred me forever. So, yeah, anyway.
Okay, so on that note, my family went down to Panama City Beach, Florida.
Yes.
At one point, and we went to a now defunct fair / carnival kind of amusement park. There's the better name for it. The amusement park called Miracle Strip Amusement Park.
Yes. And sounds quality.
It was a small step up from the fair.
Oh no.
Well, they had this one ride where, again, it was a circular thing. And I think the going in the circle is where it gets most people.
Yes.
Like you're saying. Well, my cousin, he got sick on the ride.
Mm-hmm.
But half of the circle went behind this big wall where it kind of gets pitch black. And he had the fortitude to wait until he was behind the wall.
Let me time this just perfectly.
He did. So it was four of us in this little seat. It was my brother, my cousin, me, and then my cousin who was getting sick on the outside.
Yes.
But he only did it when he was away from people and away from the eyes. And so it wasn't when we got off, no one knew that he had gotten sick. And the next time somebody got on, they didn't know that anybody had gotten sick until as we were walking away, we see somebody or we hear somebody. Ah, they had walked behind the wall to get in one of the seats and slipped.
into the...
This was Rusty? That did this?
No, it was my cousin.
Oh,
Kirk.
Your cousin.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. But he was so polite, but still somebody slipped right into it. So they had to shut down the ride, even though that he was cool as polite as possible. So we probably need to come back to a point in this podcast
I think the moral of the story is sometimes you're feeling like you're going in circles. Wait for the wall. Yeah, you're going to hit that wall.
If you feel like you're going to launch out.
Yeah, if you're going to launch out, wait till you get behind the wall. And then let someone slip in it, you know? That sounds a little heartless. It's because that's the way life is sometimes.
Wait till you get off the ride.
Wait till you get off the ride. Oh, thanks, Chris. Can you get that knife out of my back there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Well, Chris, I appreciate this episode. Not quite the normal Starve the Doubts episode.
Absolutely.
But I think
we
starved our doubts in just saying, hey, could we just talk about nothing and yet, you know, have a good episode? And I feel like maybe that's the case here.
Well, you know what I feel like that this was kind of a travelogue through our childhood.
Yes.
Mostly through Atlanta.
Yes.
Some we went down to Florida a little bit as well, but
yes,
I think that was a little walk through our childhood
a little walk down amnesia lane.
Yes. So I want to apologize to anybody that was grossed out during the Kurt story.
Yeah. And I want to apologize for anybody that's, you know, understands the pain of getting on the swings and then puking in fourth grade.
It happens, man. Sometimes happen. You just have to let it happen. You let it go.
I'm not going to talk to you anymore, Chris. I'm gonna let you go.
Launch it out, baby.
All right. See you, buddy.
I can remember I had several pair of the knee-high socks with the red two stripes at the very top of it. Those were always fun.